Welcome to the club. So I hear your name is Phantasma. Yeah. And he wants to be a funketeer. Well, why don't you make your way to the stage? Toby, what's the password?
Oh, I'm with the band.
Oh, that's right.
How much you gonna get?
No matter where I travel around the world, I can't wait to get back home to New Orleans. I miss the food. I miss my family. I miss the culture. I miss the love that I get when I see people all in the streets of New Orleans. Another thing we do here is Second Line on Sundays. Jazz and brass bands playing horns and drums. The streets are filled with people, food, dancing. And baby, when I'm walking down the streets at the Second Line, all I can hear is people whispering, "Freedom." So you know what I tell them? I heard you were looking for me.
Your ID. Cause if we gon' go deeper, I'ma need to see what's beneath the surface of your smile. If you Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
WRCT, Pittsburgh. WRCT, Pittsburgh.
You've tuned in to Pandemonium, a public affairs anthology from WRCT, Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. And now, Pandemonium.
We are sitting on Melinda Crawford Perttu's back deck, where it's a beautiful, sunny day. Thank you so much for inviting us here.
Thank you so much for reaching out to me. This is great.
Melinda, among other things that she does, well, you tell them.
Well, I'm the orchestra director and string area head at Westminster College up in New Wilmington, Pennsylvania. I'm also the violin teacher, and I direct the Scottish Fiddle Ensemble. Mention the orchestra, do all the string pedagogy stuff. If it has strings, it comes across my desk.
I'm up here because I'm a folk musician, and I want to talk to you about Scottish fiddling. Most Americans don't understand that there's a difference between Scottish fiddling and Irish fiddling. I mean, they just all think of it as Celtic music.
I know. I can't count the number of times I've been asked, oh, so you play Irish fiddle. No, I don't. I'm a Scottish fiddler. But a lot of people get them confused. They are very similar sounding, and that's sort of where the idea of the Celtic fiddling has grown. But the way I like to look at it is that if you're into languages and if you speak Spanish, you can probably understand a fair amount of Italian. Okay, yep. but you can recognize that they're different. If you don't speak Spanish or Italian and you hear them next to each other, they probably sound very, very similar. It's the same thing with Scottish and Irish fiddle playing. For those of us that do it, we hear the differences. For people who don't, it sounds just super similar. And they are. They're cousins and, you know, right across the water from each other. So it's not that surprising.
Over here in North America, both types of fiddling. Actually, there's more than one kind of Irish fiddling and there's more than one kind of Scottish fiddling. But
yep. But
all that fiddling from the British Isles and even from Normandy, all that stuff came over here. How has it affected music here?
Well, it's interesting because over in the United States, at least from the Scottish perspective, we have this fierce desire to sound Scottish. And we get very, you know, concerned. Are we sounding Scottish enough? Whereas if you go over to Scotland, they're just playing the fiddle. They're having a good time. And they're not worried about sounding Scottish because they are. So we're very concerned about, you know, the tradition and sounding Scottish, where it's actually a very fluid tradition. It's very vibrant and still going and still evolving.
To me, that's one of the things that folk musicians are always interested in. It's like that combination of preserving the origins of the music, but then also setting the stage for innovation.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And in Scottish fiddling, we also have this culture of composition. So we learn all the traditional tunes, and then we learn sort of where the modern tunes are sounding. So we learn a tune that was written 20 years ago or 5 years ago or 1 year ago. And then once you hit a certain point, and it's pretty early on, the culture encourages you to write tunes. So the repertoire is ever expanding. And the trick when you're writing is, does it sound like it fits in the niche of Scottish while it's still being sort of innovative and sounding different and sounding new? So we're still pushing the boundaries. It's like a dog chasing something. If you've ever seen a dog chase something under a bush, the nose is under the bush. They're after the rabbit, but the back two legs are hanging out behind so they can make a quick getaway. It's the same idea. We're trying to make sure that we're in the Scottish style, but we're still pushing the boundaries a little bit. So our back legs are back in the tradition, but we're still trying to push it and make it sound new. It's so neat because the tunes that are at the core of our tradition, they've already lasted for hundreds of years. And I think there's really good reason for it. The music itself is fantastic. And even today, when we're dealing with these tunes, we keep the music alive and it's about the music, but our interpretation of it can shift. And I think that's what keeps it alive and keeps it growing. Is we're focused on the music, but we all bring a little bit extra to it. So if I were to play a tune today that was played in the 18th century, they would recognize it. And vice versa, I would recognize what they're doing. But like our backup styles or the harmonies that we're using, or maybe even some of the variations that we're putting in, because this style encourages variation and creativity and individuality in our performance, I think it would be appreciated and not scorned. So, you know, William Marshall listening to me play, he'd say, yeah, I recognize that tune. What are you doing with that? That's interesting. Or maybe someone else would say, well, that's sort of cool. What was that?
You mentioned keeping the music alive. And my main music radio show is called Whiskey Before Breakfast, which is, you know, a fiddle tune that most Americans think came from North Carolina artist Mike Cross. But that's just because he made up drinking words to it, and it became a hit on the festival circuit in the 1980s. But if you look at that tune, it is an example of keeping the music alive, where you had traditional melodies coming over from the UK into Canada, working their way west to Saskatchewan, getting incorporated into sort of the music that the native people were playing, and an Anglo-Canadian fiddler put out a record with it on it, and it starts moving down to the U.S. I'm sure you could tell lots of tales like that with Scottish music, too. I mean, that's keeping the music alive and watching the tunes change as they move around.
It's really interesting. I'll give you a quick example. A number of years ago, I was doing a gig with a friend of mine who's a very good Irish fiddler, Charlene Adzema. She's, I think, out in Wisconsin now. So she has her Irish rep, and I have my Scottish rep, and we were trying to find some tunes we had in common. Well, we finally realized Mrs. McLeod's. We have Mrs. McLeod's in common. And we started playing. And it was awful because suddenly we realized I'm playing in A. She's playing in G. She's playing what I considered the B part first. And I'm playing the A part first. It was completely backwards. So we ended up having to make a compromise. We were both uncomfortable. She played it for me, A, B. And then I played it for her in the key of G. So we were both chafing a little bit while we were playing it, but we came to a consensus on how we were going to perform it in order to make it work. But it's an old tune. It's the original title, and this is MacLeod of Rasse, which is a small island off the east coast of the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And then it moved from Scotland, it hit Ireland, it's come to the U.S., and it's in so many different cultures. I mean, you could probably walk into a jam anywhere in any style and start playing the tune, and it may be a little different from what they're used to, but everyone's, oh, it's Miss McLeod's, and they'll join in, to the point that Aaron Copland, he even took it and he integrated it into his hoedown from Rodeo, which is really uncomfortable for me when I play it because I know what the tune is, and then I have to sit in the orchestra and behave myself and use the bowings that they're giving me in the style that they want me to play. It just keeps going, and it has changed, but it's still recognizable. And I think the cool thing, because I'm a big believer in just keeping the music alive and, you know, never put down your instrument and just keep going, is that one tune has spread to so many people, And so many people play it, and then so many people can play it together. It's just amazing.
In my old-time community, we call it Hop High Ladies. Yeah. But, it's the same tune.
Different titles, same tune. But I could come in, and I was like, I know that. And I could do something with you.
We are talking with Melinda Crawford Perdue of Westminster College, who, in addition to all her classical music work, is a world-renowned Scottish fiddler. You started to mention Copland using folk themes. Mm-hmm. Folk themes are everywhere in classical music.
They are, especially with composers that reach to their nationalistic roots. And it's not just, folk music from the UK. Vaughan Williams did a lot of that, and his music is incredible. You listen to it, you can tell the elements of folk music that he's bringing in there. But also composers like Brahms and Dvorak. I love programming Dvorak for my orchestra. And as a folk musician standing on the podium conducting an orchestra, it's fun because I'm also talking to them as a folk musician. If we're playing different Slavonic dances or things like that, I'm talking to them about dance form. This is a dance, and this is what we need to do because this is at its core is a dance. Yes, it has been put into a symphonic package, but they need to understand what it means to waltz. We played the Prague waltzes recently by Dvorak. And, especially right now, if we hadn't had a pandemic, I was going to have them put their instruments down. I was going to teach them how to waltz because they don't know how to waltz, and we were playing waltzes, but it would have helped them so much if I could have just, made them get up and dance so they could feel the dance energy and what needed to be done. So when we do that, when we deal with folk music, I actually talk to them frequently as a folk musician, which I just get a kick out of. And the kids are used to me, they know what I do and they know the perspective, and it's great. All of my violinists take Scottish fiddling from me at some point. They've had it with me. And I remember I was in a rehearsal with them, and it was a new composition. It had nothing to do with folk music. But there was a rhythmic figure and an articulation that I wanted them to do in their music, and it just wasn't happening. And I finally realized it was almost akin to a Scottish snap that we do in our Strathspeys space. We're working on it. It's like, folks, it's a Scottish snap. Do it like a snap. And it was beautiful because the next time we did it, it was perfect. And, that just gave me, it's like, I used Scottish snap in rehearsal and it worked. So they get both sides of it from me. And it's fun. And I'm just having a ball because I love it whenever my classical and my Scottish sides intersect. I have a switch. When I'm sitting down in an orchestral rehearsal, as a violinist, my switch is thrown to orchestral music, and I'm following my music exactly, and I'm performing, and I'm using more classical techniques. But then when I'm doing my Scottish stuff, I'm improvising things. I'm improvising my bowings and my ornamentation, and I'm thinking about it differently. So it's a skill that develops. I remember there was a time that it was several years between my stints in an orchestra and sitting down and yelling at myself mentally, going, no, follow the bowings. No, you can't do that. Follow the bowings. Be good. Because my switch had gotten rusty.
What kinds of things do you think about when you're pushing the boundaries?
A lot of times, actually, I'm thinking about rhythm or I'm thinking about variations. Our tunes are so short. So when I play through and I'm interested in making it a longer set, I will play the tune a million times and I start listening to what the tune is trying to tell me and where it might want to go or where it could go. And that becomes a variation. Sometimes it's a rhythmic variation and sometimes it's a melodic variation, just a change in note that'll just be immensely satisfying because I feel like it needs to go there.
One of the things I've noticed, and I'm used to, if I'm playing for a square dance or a contra dance, put together a two-tune medley or a three-tune medley. Mm-hmm. But it seems that a lot of Scottish fiddlers and Scottish fiddlers in the United States as well, and a lot of the Cape Breton fiddlers, mm-hmm. they do these like 4, 5, 6 song sets.
Some of it does come from playing for dancers. Because for dancers, the tradition, like a standard setup is like 8 tunes, twice through 8 tunes. So it sort of comes from that. And we have key changes in between so you can hear the different tunes. But it's also trying to turn them into performance pieces. Starting with Skinner in the 20th century, fiddling sort of moved out of the kitchen and only playing for dancing and went to the concert stage. And with that, we can't just play, you know, a 16-second tune and be done. Get sort of boring and disjointed, not something for an audience to just really listen and kick back and enjoy. So we do build longer tunes. I know some of mine can be, you know, one tune long or two, all the way up to four or five. And if I'm doing multiple repetitions, then I'm sitting on a 5 to 6 minute set, which is a nice length to do if you're on the concert stage.
Do you enjoy playing for dancers? Do you get a chance to do it very much?
I don't get as much opportunity to play for dancers as I would like. I do occasionally, and it's a blast. I love it because there's nothing better than watching people dance to the music that you're creating. So most of my work is actually for the stage.
Well, you've mentioned several things that I think we should stop and let you talk about. What kinds of things you're doing in Scottish fiddling here at Westminster College?
One of the things that I love about it is that at Westminster, anyone who plays violin can take Scottish fiddle lessons for credit. So you can take Scottish fiddle lessons for credit that will actually count toward degree programs. It really will. And I've built a string ensemble. We're in a little flux right now, the pandemic and people traveling around. We're called Cuil na Tíd, which translates to mean literally string music. But because it's in Scottish Gaelic, it's Scottish string music. So we do that and we perform around fairly locally, nothing too far, because we can't take the students too far away from classes. And here every summer I host the Strathganey School of Scottish Fiddling, and it is a full week of Scottish fiddling 24/7. We run classes beginning up into advanced. We do private Scottish fiddle lessons. We have evening events. We do concerts that are open to the public. We do everything that we do for the entire week is completely Scotland and Scottish fiddling centric, because we'll jam till the early morning hours and then get up again and we're right back in class. So it's a fabulous time and the best people in the world and the best music.
Melinda Crawford Purtue and I are having a good time sitting on her back porch, and you've gotten international recognition for judging Scottish fiddling contests. What do you look for?
The first thing, first and foremost, is we're looking for style. We're looking for Scottishness and the interpretation. So it's, if I think about Scottish fiddling as being a circle, everyone has their own spot in the circle. So the first question is, are you in the circle? And if you're not, how can I help you get into the circle? If you are in the circle, what are you doing there? And how are you making it your own? How are you dealing with interpretation? So, I mean, there's execution. You know, are you playing grossly out of tune? You know, are you losing your tempo? There's that type of mechanical stuff that we evaluate as well. When someone's playing a slow air, are you telling a story? What's your phrasing like? Are you using your ornaments creatively? Are you making me feel something? Or is it wooden? And if it's wooden, how can I help you relax that so you can focus on the music and make that story? That we ask them to play a slow air so we can hear the musicality. We ask for a march because you're asking people to move without making them dance. So it's a nice in-between type of feel, because we think frequently of people dancing. But with a march, you have to move them across the floor, but they can't dance. So we ask for a march. And that also suggests some of our connections with the bagpipes, because the bagpipes do a lot of marches. So it's a three-tune set. So the air they play separately, then it's a march, Streth, Spey, Reel as a three-tune set. And they're shifting different tune types, which transitions that can be really interesting. So they go for the march, and then they go into the Streth, Spey. And the Streth, Spey is the national tune type of Scotland. It originated in Scotland. It is associated with the Streth, Spey dance, and is a major genre in what we play. So that has to be in there. And there are loads of ways of playing Streth, Spey. There's the Highland style. There's the Northeast style. There's a lot of stuff in terms of interpretation. So, you know, which style you are sort of planting yourself, how are you doing? Are you getting the light and shade, the tension and release? Are you getting the danceability? How's your execution? Are your snaps nice and snappy and crisp? So we're looking for that type of stuff. But, you know, it's still music. Are you doing any phrasing in there? Have you forgotten your dynamics? And then we transition into a reel, which is just, it's all about the groove. It's all about the dance. You know, it doesn't have to be the fastest thing on earth, but it does have to have groove.
So was march Strathspey reel in that order?
Yep.
Could you describe, because like most Americans, I don't know what the heck a Strathspey is.
Sure. But I think, honestly, it'd be better to play one.
Okay.
A Strathspey is combined with it's a series of sort of long, short, short, long types of notes. And the rhythm, so this is a Scottish snap. Okay, that's sort of short, long. If we were looking at notation, it'd be a 16th dotted eighth. Combined with that basically, those are the building blocks of the Strathspey. So just a nice Strathspey. An old tune by the name of Captain Campbell. And the nice thing with that tune is that it can go both Highland and Northeast. So you can hear the same tune done in two different ways. But that's a great example of a Strathspey. And you can sort of feel the beat as I'm playing it. But that type of rhythm just permeates Strathspey tunes.
You mentioned you could do it in two different styles. How?
So the way I just played it was more of a Highland style. If you've ever been to the games and you've seen the dancers, mm-hmm. the ones that are going boingy, boingy, boingy up on their toes, it's more of a Highland style. So you're going to hear. The other style would probably be a little more appropriate for like the Royal Scottish Country Dancers. Mm-hmm. That is, it's actually a little more associated with the origins of square dance. Mm-hmm. And that's a little more across the floor. So you're not going to hear the whole, they're landing on the floor. But
one of the questions I emailed you about how choosing to play one of your favorite Strathspeys as a almost like a lament or an air. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so much variety you can do with those melodies.
There is. And again, it comes back to the sort of the music stands alone. So I just played that one is two different Strathspeys, but I've taken a Strathspey and I have turned it into a lament because when I was playing it, that's what the tune was telling me it wanted to do. And from my own personal interpretation, that suddenly really, really resonated with me. I've never tried it with this tune, but so sort of taking that exact same tune and transitioning it into an air.
I get the sense from talking to you that in this Scottish tradition, there is this continued tradition of innovation,
yes.
taking the tunes and making them your own.
Yeah, which is incredibly freeing and one of my favorite aspects of it because you can change the key, You can change the mode, major to minor, minor to major, and the creativity is appreciated. And as long as you're doing it, you know, all the technique is Scottish and you're staying true to the music and you're playing music, there's an excitement and just an appreciation for the way the tunes are staying alive and just different ways of viewing it. You know, in the beginning when you get going on this, we do a lot of mimicking. We advise people to listen. Mm-hmm. And we steal ideas. I'm listening to a recording and I hear a cool ornament. It's like, oh, that's neat. I like that. But then I take it and I make it my own. Bagpipe ornaments. I mean, that's a lot of how we got our ornaments. We've stolen ideas from the other instruments. In the beginning, we do a lot of mimicking. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're trying to sound like so-and-so, or we're using their bowings or something. But then the expectation is, okay, now what do you think it should be? Or how do you hear it? And the expectation is, those are sort of the training wheels. And they're fine. Those are good training wheels to have. But then the expectation is then you need to sound like you. The creativity is so valued. It's freeing and it's fun.
I've taken up an awful lot of your time, but before you kick me off your porch and I head back down the road, you need to brag on where people can find your music and find out more about you, Melinda Crawford Purtu.
Well, my website is www.melindacrawford.com, and I also house the Strathganey School of Scottish Fiddling under the same website. You can see that up in the menu bar, or you can Google Strathganey. Strathgheny. It's actually a made-up name. So the only thing you're going to find is the fiddle camp. Strath means valley of in Scottish Gaelic. So when we were trying to name our school, we were trying to pick something regional. And, you know, we're surrounded by a whole lot of Indian names, which is great, but it doesn't quite work with the Scottish thing. So my husband came up with it. We took Strath and Allegheny, and that's why it's Strathganey. But the sound of it totally works. It works with, you know, Balvenie from Scotland and, you know, Strathclyde and all the other things that are over there. So Strathganey actually sounds pretty good. So, yeah, that's all available at my website. I have CDs on there and books and practice items and free tunes. I do have free tunes on my website, stuff that I have on my album. So if you're interested in just some free music, it's a good place to go. And if you have any questions about Scottish fiddling or Strathganey, please feel free to reach out and contact me. All my contact information is on the website, too. I'd love to talk to you. I can go on about Scottish fiddling forever. www.melindacrawford.com.
Thank you so much, Melinda. And would you like to play one more thing for us as we go out?
Sure. Sure. How about some jigs?
Thank you.
You've been listening to Pandemonium. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. Thanks for listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
My name is not Mock. No, it is Mock. My name's Mock. My name's Paul, actually, but it's a show called Viva La Mock. Welcome to another fun-filled episode, program, whatever you want to call it, of this this radio thing I do for you each and every week at this time. Hey, I want to let you know it's a special show tonight. Why? Because I'm actually on vacation. Took a little time off, and instead of playing a repeat show, I thought I'd do something interesting. So tonight's show for the next 4 hours are going to be album sides. It's only side A of debut albums from a variety of artists from my personal collection. So just sit back, listen, and enjoy. We'll get to it right after this message.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
Feel like your emotions are all over the place? A healthy routine that includes enough sleep, exercise, and proper nutrition can help you feel more centered.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
We're going to kick off the program with Wilco. Released March 28, 1995, AM marked the debut from former Uncle Tupelo member Jeff Tweedy. The album didn't sell as well as Tweedy's Uncle Tupelo counterpart Jay Farrar's new project, Sunvolt. However, this album was only a precursor of what was to come from Wilco. Recorded at the Easley Recording Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, here's side one of Wilco's debut, AM.
That you missed. WRCT, Pittsburgh.